Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby. Here is the chief editor of the DX Audio Service, Fred Vobey.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for December 2009. Happy Holidays. This is issue number 297. If you'd like to write to us at the DX Audio Service, the address is 706 Mackenzie Drive, spelled M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E. That's in Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Email is sales, S-A-L-E-S, at nrcdxas.org. A yearly subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. and Canadian members is $28. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe or renew, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. Or if you're on the internet, you can get your DX Audio Service on EDXN in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system. You must be able to download and navigate a website to use this service.
Hi, we're the Supremes, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better this Christmas.
Thanks, Fred, and welcome again, everyone, to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for December 2009. And what is that on the roof I hear? No, that's not Santa, not yet, anyway. Anyway, call letter changes. And the FCC has been really scarce on issuing new calls the last, month. So we've only got five to pass along to you this month. On 840 in Mims, Florida, WPGS has made the switch to WGRU. 1370 WELG in Ellenville, New York is now known as WRWD. 1400 KJOK, Yuma, Arizona. They now ID themselves as KCYK. 1450, a new station in Hellendale, California. They've picked KTQE as a call sign. And another new station, this one in Delhart, Texas, on 1600. Their call, KSHG. Well, construction permits, which have taken to the air over the past 30 days. 670 KPUA in Hilo, Hawaii. They're now on with 5,000 watts day and night non-directional, and they've cut their power in half. Yes, they used to be 10 kilowatts, now they're only 5. 780 WAVA, Arlington, Virginia. They're now on the air with 12,000 watts daytime non-directional and a critical hours power of 9,800 watts non-directional, daytime only. That's D1. 840 KXNT, North Las Vegas, Nevada. Having operated on a special temporary authority of 50,000 watts day, 16,000 watts night with two patterns, KXNT is now licensed for and operating with U4, 50,000 watts daytime, 25,000 watts at night, which is really no change in the power, but they've moved to a new four-tower site. The new day pattern sends a balloon-shaped lobe to the northeast, while the adjusted night pattern sends a small, slender lobe to the north, and a large slender lobe to the southwest, maybe trying to hit Los Angeles, who knows. 960 WSVU, North Palm Beach, Florida. Their construction permit for U4, that's two different patterns, 2400 watts daytime, 1400 watts at night is now on, and they've doubled their daytime power. 1050 WFSC, Franklin, North Carolina. They're now on with 5000 watts during the day, 153 watts at night, non-directional. Well, last issue we reported that WDVM Eau Claire, Wisconsin on 1050, whose license for 1,000 watts days and 500 watts at night now non-directional, had been granted a construction permit for 860 watts days, 260 watts at night non-directional from a new taller tower, and then was granted a special temporary authority for 860 days, 430 at night. Well, the new tower construction had been completed and the facility ready for WDVM to move to and resume operation, and the tower owner insisted that WDVM move on to the new tower, but the operation on the new tower remained pending as the FCC staff informed WDVM that there was a Canadian objection to the grandfathered nighttime operation that was filed in 1994 but remained unresolved. Well, now the STA has been deleted and the station has now gotten the go-ahead for operation U1, 860 days, 260 watts at night. 1170 WQHC, Hanceville, Alabama. They've been granted a special temporary authority for daytime-only operation, 10 whole watts. They're now using a WIP antenna while they're trying to find a suitable site for a new tower. 1190 WAMT, Pine Castle, Sky Lake, Florida. They're now on with 4,700 watts daytime, 230 watts at night, directional nighttime only, and we call that U2. 1300 WGDJ, Rensselaer, New York. They're now on with 10,000 watts days, 8,000 watts at night, two patterns, that's U4. Their two patterns, both favoring the north, remain as before, but obviously they're a little bit bigger. Also on 1300 WKCY, Harrisonburg, Virginia. They're now on the air with 6,400 watts during the day, 5 watts at night, all non-directional, and they've relocated to a new tower using a Kinstar antenna system. 1340 WYBC, New Haven, Connecticut. Their CP for 1,000 watts daytime, 880 watts at night is now on, all non-directional, of course, on that local channel. 1370 WSHV, South Hill, Virginia. They're now on with 4,200 watts during the day, 41 watts at night, non-directional, and they've added that night operation. 1430 KFIG, Fresno, California. They're now on with 5,000 watts day and night, U4, two patterns. No change for the power, but they've moved to a new transmitter site. Also on 1430 WBLR, Batesburg, South Carolina. They're now on with 4,500 watts days, 140 watts at night, all non-directional, after moving to a slightly taller tower. And 1490 WSGB, Sutton, West Virginia. They're now on with 900 watts day and night, non-directional. The 100-watt reduction was necessitated because they increased their tower height by 45 feet to a total of 195 feet, and they've installed a new folded unipole antenna. Five new stations have been granted this past month. On 780, Mulberry, Florida has been granted 250 watts day and night from three 195-foot towers. The day and night patterns have identical parameters. The plot is kidney-shaped with the null toward Chicago, of course. Mulberry is southeast of Lakeland. Two stations on 1340 have been granted. Holt, Alabama, 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. And Conway, New Hampshire, 620 watts day and night, non-directional. On 1490, a new station has been granted in Fayette, Alabama, 1,000 watts day and night. They'll share the tower with WLDX 990. And on 1500, Winchester, Nevada, they've been granted 1,200 watts days, 1,500 watts at night from six towers, directional, nighttime only. Well, some actions from the FCC and the CRTC this month. On 570, CFWH, Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, has been granted a move to 94.5 MHz with 3.3 kilowatts. When operational, the new FM station will continue to offer CBC's English language programming over 14 relay stations in the Yukon and one in British Columbia. Instead of the usual 90-day simulcast period, CFWH 570 will be allowed to simulcast for 3 years. 980 WHAW, Lost Creek, West Virginia. CP has been granted to change their city of license to Lost Creek from Weston. 1040 WZNA in Moca, Puerto Rico has been granted 9,000 watts days, 250 watts at night, two patterns, that's U4. 1000 KCEO, Vista, California, they've been granted a CP for 5,000 watts during the day, 900 watts at night, U4. They'll add one tower for a total of four. On 1240 CBXP, Tahsis, British Columbia, T-A-H-S-I-S, I believe that's how you say it. The move of CBXP, a 40-watt low-power relay of CBCV-FM Victoria to FM at 90.5, has been approved with 46.5 watts. 1360 WIXI, Jasper, Alabama, a CP has been granted for 12,000 watts during the day, 42 watts at night, all non-directional. 1460 KHOJ, St. Charles, Missouri. licensed for U4, 5,000 watts during the day, 85 watts at night. KHOJ held a CP for 5,000 watts during the day, 350 at night, then applied for U4, 5,000 days to 10 at night. That has been granted. 1610 WQLB 319 from Lima, Ohio. A CP has been granted for 100 watts day and night to the Allen County EMA. The station is under the engineering eye of our own Fred Vobey,
whom I'm sure will have a note or two about this a little later.
Also on 1610 CJWI Montreal. A CP has been granted for a frequency change to 1410, which is the old CFMB 1280 frequency before they moved to 1410, da-da-da-da-da. And they'll have 10,000 watts day and night using one pattern, so that's U3, at a new transmitter site. They've been approved to move there because they stated they're suffering interference from CHHA 1610 in Toronto. And finally, 1690 CHTO in Toronto. A CP has been granted to increase their day power. Once on the air, they will be U1, 3,000 watts during the day and 1,000 at night. More stations have been reported as being relayed on FM. Most of these are on low-power FM stations, but we report them anyway. 550 WAME, Statesville, North Carolina, is now on W225BD 92.9. 590 KLBJ in Austin, Texas, is on K259AJ 99.7. 630 WEJL, Scranton, Pennsylvania, can be heard on W274AO 102.7. 730 WUMP Madison, Alabama is now heard on W280BA, which is 103.9. 730 WMTC in Van Cleve, Kentucky is also heard on WMTC-FM 99.9. That's a full power station. 770 KUOM in Minneapolis is heard on K283BG 104.5. 910 WGTO Cassopolis, Michigan, they're heard on W266BS 101.1. 950 WPEN in Philadelphia is heard on full power WPEN-FM 97.5 in Burlington, New Jersey. 1150 KIMM, Rapid City, South Dakota. They're now on K294BT 106.7. KAHL 1310 in San Antonio is heard on K279AB 103.7. 1340 WJAM, Selma, Alabama is simulcast on W239BP 95.7 in Eufaula. 1370 WRWD in Ellenville, New York is heard on WRWD FM 107.3, another full power station, licensed to Highland, New York. 1420 WRCG Columbus, Georgia is on W295AY 106.9 in Crystal Valley. 1440 WHDM McKenzie, Tennessee is heard on W255BF 98.9. 1450 WKIP Poughkeepsie, New York. They're heard on WKIP FM 99.3 in Ellenville, also a full power station. 1500 KABR Alamo Community, New Mexico is heard on KABR FM 88.1, full power station. 1530 KZNX Creedmoor, Texas is heard on KHHL 104.9 in Dripping Springs with their sports format. 1560 KTXZ Westlake Hills, Texas is also heard on K236AY 95.1. 1580 WEAM Columbus, Georgia is heard on full power WIOL 95.7 in Greenville. And 1580 WANB Waynesburg, Pennsylvania is heard on W286AI 105.1. Well, a couple of cancellations this past month on 1200, an unbuilt station in Highland, New York. And canceled is the license for 1240 KMCL in Donnelly, Idaho. Well, some news items here and there.
Returning to the airwaves, WMTC 730 Van Cleve, Kentucky is back with Southern Gospel.
WRFV 910 Wellborn, Florida returns with Talk.
KEOR 1120 Catoosa, Oklahoma is back, as is
WTKN 1230 Corinth, Mississippi returns with a talk format. WLLH 1400 Lowell, Lawrence, Massachusetts with Spanish Tropical, and their slogan is La Mega. KDXE 1380 North Little Rock, Arkansas returns with talk. And WZRK 1550 Lake Geneva, Wisconsin is back on with a standards format. They're known as Avenue 1550. Reported as silent, WLLI 1190 Humboldt, Tennessee, WDNT 1280 Dayton, Tennessee, WIRB 1490 Level Plains, Alabama, WIKC 1490 Bogalusa, Louisiana, WTRI 1520 Brunswick, Maryland is off again, and WILA 1580 Danville, Virginia is silent at the current time. Well, some fines to report this past month. KCMY 1300 Carson City, Nevada has been fined $3,500 for failure to enclose their towers within an affected lock fence or other enclosure. KDLS 1310 Perry, Iowa has had its $7,000 fine for failure to renew on time canceled. It seems they did file during the allotted time frame but failed to include the fee. So the FCC has now levied a fine of $187.50, which is a percentage of the late filing fee. A fine of $11,000 has been assessed to the owner of the tower used by KWNA 1400 Ely, Nevada, for failure to comply with the FCC rules concerning antenna structure registration, lighting, monitoring, record keeping, and notification requirements. In a nutshell, they turned off the obstruction lights because they claimed a malfunctioning part was causing interference to the KWNA signal and failed to report the fact that the light was out to the FAA San Francisco office. Naughty boys. A fine of $7,000 has been assessed to KQLO 1590 Sun Valley, Nevada for failure to file for license renewal in a timely manner and subsequent unauthorized operation. Well, here's another news item. Richfield Electronics Limited of China has been fined $18,000 for marketing equipment which did not comply with the FCC's emission limits and labeling requirements. In March of 2008, the Commission's Enforcement Bureau received a complaint alleging that the whole house FM transmitter exceeded the emission limit of the FCC rules. Based on that complaint, the Bureau's Spectrum Enforcement Division initiated an investigation, testing a unit, and they confirmed that the WH transmitter substantially exceeded the legal emission limits. The testing facility also observed that the WH transmitter was not labeled with an FCC identification number. I've done some research on the above-named product on the Richfield website and on the internet in general. I could find no mention of a WH transmitter, so they must have pulled the device from the production and subsequently all the shelves. Well, my thanks go out to the following for adding to this month's column: Sean Axelrod, Jerry Conkling, Wayne Heinen, Dean McIntyre, James Niven, Dave Schmidt, and Fred Vobey. And I wish all of you a very happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And now I would like to extend a special thanks to Mr. John Bowker, who is wrapping up a long career as 1. A member of the NRC's Board of Directors, 2. A contributor to the printed DX News, 3. A contributor to this DX audio service, and 4. The go-to guy when planning and hosting NRC conventions. For as long as I can remember, John has been a special friend, contributing his time and efforts. His dedication and service, along with his wife Linda, will be sorely missed. Best wishes, John.
Hi, this is Duke of the Four Tops.
Merry Christmas, baby.
Merry Christmas, love.
Well, thanks once again, Bill Hale. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this final segment of the Travelogue on the DX Audio Service. We've got so many sound bites to play for you today, I don't know how we're going to get them all done in the time Fred can give us. But, it's, you know, 22 years, how do you summarize it? And I guess the best thing I can suggest is, why don't we start back at my beginning, and we'll just play you some of my favorite outtakes. Now, I don't have any recordings of me back in the 1946 days on WCAX in Burlington at 620. That was the CBS station there in Vermont. And then there were the AM and FM stations in Middlebury, Vermont, one of which I built, and then another one in Princeton Junction, New Jersey, the FM station there I built. But we never kept any sound bites. So what we have is my earliest sound bite now is from March 1978. This is the way I sounded in those days.
On the fantastic Gerard's Music Piano and Organ Liquidation Sale. Now through Monday at Gerard's Music, next to Keats Ford on North Olden Avenue in Ewing Township. Your dial is set at 1350. The Spirit of New Jersey, WHWH Princeton.
Good morning, mostly cloudy skies. It's 44 degrees.
I'm George Mathias Kondoff, WHWH News, with the 11 o'clock edition.
And there came a time shortly after that recording was made when some of the management left WHWH to open up WIMG in Ewing, New Jersey, and they took me along with them for some reason.
Yeah. Benny Goodman in Paris. 35 degrees, we're looking ahead to some snow tonight, maybe heavy at times, on WIMG in Ewing. 4 o'clock.
From the ABC News, I'm John Grimes. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Fred Manfra.
And now, WIMG presents the Sunday Beat of the Big Bands. Good afternoon once again. I'm John Dennett, and I've got a big grin on my face because of the response we're getting to today's contests.
Oh, now I remember why they took me with them when they went over to WIMG. It was because I would work all Sunday afternoon. I'd come on at noon on Sunday and work right through the Devils game. We carried the hockey games Sunday nights. But then Mercer County offered me a position on their FM radio station that had just come on the air, WWFM, so I moved my noise over to them.
At this time, WWFM changes its musical format from classical music and opera to the best in big band and jazz. We hope you've enjoyed our broadcast day so far and that you'll stay with us throughout the evening. This is 89.1 FM, WWFM, Trenton, a service from Mercer County Community College.
Thanks a lot, Liz. Hi, everybody. This is the Saturday Beat of the Big Bands. I'm John Dennett.
Okay. Well, you're detecting a pattern, I trust, by now. Yes, I did big band shows on weekends. I had a regular job at RCA, at the Research Center in Princeton, New Jersey. That was my real job for 38 years. However, how did I get started collecting IDs? Very simple. I was traveling around. I got into Chicago, had a radio on with some earphones in an airport waiting for an airplane, and I heard a station break unlike any I had ever heard before. That little jingle went through my mind for weeks and weeks, and the next time I went to Chicago, I was carrying a boombox, my first Hitachi radio cassette recorder. And I recorded the darn thing, and that was number one in the whole collection. Now, I've recorded a few others over the years, and this next one, I have to include it in this collection for this last program, because it was the most requested. When people heard it, they said, hey, could you play that again? And for a period of, I don't know, maybe 3 years, once or twice a year, I had to play this again just to satisfy the interest. Now, if you haven't heard this next one, I defy you to tell me on first listening what the city is that this station broadcasts from.
It's 12 o'clock. W-I-C-E. Providence.
Direct from ABC News, I'm Joan Bennett.
And this program segment certainly wouldn't be complete without playing you my all-time favorite ID.
What a day for a walk. What a day for a song. And if the rain is falling, it won't be raining long. WIBC, Indianapolis. WIBC. Moving along, take it slow, 'cause when you're feeling happy, the day just seems to go. WIBC, Indianapolis. WIBC.
Now, back in 1991, I retired for the second time, incidentally, and Fred and some of his chums got together and put together the most absurd collection of station breaks you can imagine. These are all legitimate, by the way.
610 WTVN, Columbus, John Bowker's favorite radio station. John, you're retiring. We're all going to miss you here in Columbus.
We'd like to say hello to John Bowker from CHYR 710 in Canada's Sun Parlor.
Here's one for John Bowker from KFMS AM North Las Vegas, FM Las Vegas, making you professional listeners as we put you on the payroll from 12 in a row, KFM 102.
All news, all day, every day, keeping John Bowker informed. This is News Radio 95, WWJ, Detroit.
Des salutations particulières de la région de Windsor-Détroit à Monsieur John Bowker. Et voici le groupe Corbeau avec Marjon.
And finally taking me back to where I started in 1946, although they changed their call letters.
Hello, John Bowker. This is Ernie Farrar.
John Hill.
Chuck Setzer.
Bob Sherman.
Sean LeMay.
George Como.
Dave McGown.
The sound of the good life.
Pretty dumb collection, right? But oh, so nice. Well now, at the very beginning of this program segment, I said I would be listing the names of people who have contributed IDs to the travelogue over the last 23 years it's been. And I'm going to do that right now. Each of these people has devoted hours of time to setting up a radio, setting up a recorder, making a cassette, getting the cassette in an envelope, addressing the envelope, taking it down to the post office, mailing it to me. The time and expense is just phenomenal, the contributions that each of these following people have made to the travelogue, and they have my undying thanks. Here's the list. Ray Arruda, Steve Bauer, Adam Bouvier, Ron Clark, Bruce Conti, Rusty Curry, Carl Skip Dabelstein, Rick Dow, Mike Dukin, Steve Francis, Ron Gitshire, George Guler, Bill Hale, Bob Harrington, Wayne Heinen, Tim Hendel, Ernie Holt, Clark Ingram, Bob Jadruziak, Scott Johnson, Mike Lance, Don League, Nancy Lynn, Larry Main, John Malachy, Mark Marino, Ed McDonald, Jeff Miller, Paul Mount, Josh Owens, Jerry Peterson, Camille Petreca, who filled us in from Hartford, thanks Camille, Bob Rathbun, Werner Reutsch from overseas, Billy Sampson, John Sampson, Tom Sanders, Barry Chenal, Mike Smith, John W. Smith, Jerry Starr, Peter Taylor, Dick Truax, Fred Vobey, Tandy Way, Phil Wayne, yes, Phil, WOLF in Syracuse, that was your contribution, Wally Warrow, Powell Way, Ernie Wesolowski. There were at least four people I want to single out. If it hadn't been for Mark Strickert, the collection probably would have foundered the very first year we started it. Mark Strickert has contributed over 2,000 of the 14,000 IDs that I have here in the studio. Dale Hamm. Without Dale, I don't know what we would have done, because he covered so much of, at that time, the unfamiliar South and West for us. Dale filled in maybe a dozen cassettes at one time. Mark Durenberger and Scott Feibusch have recently come through with many, many recordings that we've used on the travelogue, so thanks very much. Now, our two sons, Dan and John, have both done so much. John S. Bowker traveled the far west while he was working for Valparaiso University in a certain capacity, and had recorders going throughout Oregon and Washington, and that was just great. But the person who deserves the most praise is my wife, Linda, and without her love and support, this collection would have never happened. And that brings me to Fred Vobey. Fred, I consider you one of my closest friends. You're a remarkable guy. Your invention of the DX Audio Service was inspired, and the way you've carried it on since 1985, unbelievable. Just keep up the good work, my man. I've enjoyed being with all of you for the past 2 decades. I hope we find a way to meet again sometime. But until then, so long for now. And here's Mark Durenberger.
Well, hi there, and happy holidays, everyone. Mark Durenberger with the last of the band scans for the year 2009. It's December, and we want to wish all of you a very happy holiday season. We're going to take a minute this time around to talk about the Armed Forces radio stations in the European broadcasting area, which came about as the result of operations in World War II. We'll take our information from an article by Sven Martinson and from American Forces Network Histories. American Forces Network, AFN, Europe, dates back to World War II when the network began broadcasting from London, July 4, 1943. Using BBC emergency facilities, the first radio broadcasts included less than 5 hours of recorded shows, a BBC newscast, and a sportscast. AFN London, part of the Armed Forces radio service, used landlines and 5 regional transmitters to reach U.S. troops in the United Kingdom. During the next 11 months, AFN's broadcast day expanded to 19 hours, and 50 additional transmitters were installed, including 6 in Northern Ireland. AFN combined with the BBC and the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation to form the Allied Expeditionary Forces programs. On June 6, 1944, AFN personnel accompanied the invasion force when Allied troops stormed ashore in France. As D-Day approached, the network joined with the BBC and the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation to develop programs especially for the Allied Expeditionary Forces. When the actual invasion began, AFN programs were beamed to the war fronts via long-wave transmitters from the BBC and then retransmitted by AFRS mobile vans that were attached to the various U.S. Army units attacking the European mainland. Mobile stations, complete with personnel, broadcasting equipment, and a record library, were deployed to broadcast music and news to troops in the field. The mobile stations also reported on frontline activities and fed the news reports back to studio locations in London. Although the network's administrative headquarters remained in London, its operational headquarters soon moved to AFN Paris. In November 1944, AFN Paris was located in the Herald Tribune building on the Rue de Berry, broadcasting from a 15-kilowatt transmitter given to the U.S. forces by a French government that, at that time, greatly appreciated the Allied liberation of the nation. As Allied forces continued to push German soldiers back into their homeland, AFN moved east as well. The liberation of Belgium, France, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands saw AFN stations serving the forces liberating Biarritz, Caen, Le Havre, Marseille, Nice, Paris, and Reims. It's now the end of World War II in Europe. May 1945, and AFN Frankfurt goes on the air from a mobile van parked behind the famed IG Farben building. That was General Dwight Eisenhower's headquarters building in Frankfurt. On June 10, 1945, AFN Munich began beaming its signal from the mansion at Kalbachstrasse to 2 100-kilowatt transmitters in Munich and Stuttgart. In August 1945, AFN Europe moved its headquarters from London to the European mainland in Frankfurt, Germany. AFN forces in Berlin, Bremen, and Nuremberg soon followed. On December 31, 1945, AFN London signed off the air. And during 1948, AFN closed all its AM stations in France. During the late 1940s, AFN reporters and microphones covered such significant world events as the Nuremberg war crime trials, the Soviet blockade of West Berlin, and the Berlin airlift. After the war, AFN and AFRS had studios and transmit centers in Berlin, Kaiserslautern, Munich, Nuremberg, and Stuttgart in Germany, and in Paris and Orléans in France. There was the Blue Danube network in several Austrian cities, operated by American and British interests. All of these stations had power levels of from just a few hundred watts to the aforementioned 100 kilowatts. AFN Italy operated at low power, as little as 5 watts on 540, to serve local military bases. Even the Canadians were on the air in occupied and post-war Europe. In the 1950s, the U.S. operated offshore stations serving Greece, the Mediterranean, and North Africa from ships transmitting usually as the Voice of America. Some operations called themselves simply Forces Broadcasting Service, or FBS, in an attempt to disassociate themselves from any nationalistic messages. In later years, low-powered relay stations of the Armed Forces Radio Service were on the air in Greenland, Iceland, the Azores, Ethiopia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, even Iran. Again, during the war, those broadcasts were from ships, but eventually migrated to small land stations. On March 17, 1948, AFN Stuttgart signed on the air, and in 1949, AFN Bremen moved north to the port and became AFN Bremerhaven. There was much expansion at the network in the 1950s. AFN Nuremberg began broadcasting from the Grand Hotel in downtown Nuremberg in 1950. 3 years later, AFN Kaiserslautern began local programming from a mobile van. On May 23, 1958, AFN France returned to the air when AFN Orléans began broadcasting to U.S. military personnel in Camp Delage, Drew Air Base, and Orléans. AFN Poitiers joined the AFN France network on November 20, 1958, and AFN Verdun followed on October 16, 1959. AFN France came on the air and grew into the collection of almost 50 FM radio transmitters, scattered throughout the region to inform and entertain American troops stationed there. France withdrew from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in 1967 and kindly asked the United States to leave the country, sounding the demise of AFN France. The station was trucked north, along with all the U.S. forces, heading for a new Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe. AFN Shape signed on the air in 1967 at Chèvre, Belgium. From its conception in 1967 until 1974, AFN Shape radio service was actually originated in Frankfurt and was broadcast to the Shape audience. On February 5, 1974, AFN Shape became a full-blown staffed AFN affiliate and originated its own broadcasts to the local audiences in Belgium. From the late 1940s to 1966, the AFN Europe Network headquarters and Frankfurt affiliate were located in the Hirsch Castle on the Main River in a Frankfurt suburb. In 1966, Hessen, Germany State Radio Hessischer Rundfunk provided a building near downtown Frankfurt for AFN. In 1984, AFN Network headquarters in Frankfurt started receiving regular satellite transmissions from the AFRTS Broadcast Center in California. Using a facility at Usingen, Germany, a satellite positioned over the Indian Ocean, and a system of television receive-only dishes, the AFN Superstation began radio and television satellite transmissions on December 29, 1987. Before 1989, most AFN Europe FM stations played recorded music for an older audience, and the primary information network was on the AM dial. In the late 1980s, the AFN FM frequencies became the standard bearer for local radio services and acquired the moniker ZFM. Then in January 1991, the network dispatched news teams and technicians to Kuwait and Saudi Arabia for operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm. These professional broadcasters reported to families of soldiers deployed from Europe and staffed a number of the U.S. radio stations making up the Armed Forces Desert Network. The U.S. defense drawdown began in earnest after the Gulf War and impacted AFN stations across Europe. Many of the AFN standard bearers shut their doors in the 1990s, including Munich in 1992, Bremerhaven in 1993, and AFN Berlin and AFN Soesterberg, Netherlands in 1994. AFN Stuttgart relocated in 1993 to serve the troops in the Heidelberg and Mannheim military communities. In 1995, the last U.S. forces in Nuremberg were relocated, and AFN Nuremberg closed. The staff and equipment headed to the hills of Vilsick, Germany, and signed on as AFN Bavaria. In late 1998, U.S. forces vacated the beautiful southern German city of Augsburg, and a large transmitter serving a number of active duty and a large number of retired Americans in southern Germany fell silent. U.S. military radio and television service in Europe is now the responsibility of the Army Broadcasting Service, ABS. AFN uses much of the top-rated stateside radio and television programming, provided at a relatively small cost by AFRTS. Locally produced radio and television messages are placed in these programs, where normally in the USA you would see commercials. The AFN network and local stations work with military leaders throughout Europe to provide information in these messages to keep the military and civilian personnel in theater informed and updated on significant events around the different military commands. It's a completely different world for armed forces radio today, but it filled a major need during its existence, bringing American soldiers stationed in Europe a lot closer to home. And it all started as a propaganda and troop service effort during the darker years of World War II. And that's our story on the Armed Forces radio stations in the European broadcasting area, from an article by Sven Martinson and from the American Forces Network Histories. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. Have a great holiday and a happy new year, and we'll see you just around the corner. Until then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be cruising the websites, and especially those who have nothing to do with radio, and find an article which is written by a National Radio Club member promoting radio. Such was the case on a website, and I found an article written by James Niven, who's a National Radio Club member. It's titled, Who Listens to Radio? Introduction to the Wonderful World Available from Your Radio. Goes like this. Everyone listens to the radio sometime during their busy day for either news, sports results, or the entertainment, or just as a hobby. When you tune the tuning knob on your radio looking for your favorite station, you hear lots of other stations between your local stations. This is a serious hobby enjoyed by many around the world on a regular basis, tuning in the weaker stations to hear which city and state or even country they come from. This hobby is known as DXing. DX means distant listening. Listening to distant radio stations from around the country. For those who tune in to distant radio stations, they're known as DXers. There is an AM band, which is found on everyone's car radio, covering 530 to 1700, and there's an FM band, also found on your radio, covering 88 to 108. Back in the 1920s, during the birth of radio, people would huddle around their newly purchased radio sets and listen to far-off radio stations in other cities and states. The stations would then ask listeners to send them a card or a letter stating how well their signal can be picked up at their location, and the station would in turn send them back postcards and items from the radio station. This hobby can be pursued with the simplest form of radio, which most people have in their homes. Stations in North America are separated by 10 kHz channel spacing to reduce interference to each other. Beginning at 540, 550, 560, all the way up to 1700. During the daylight hours, you'll hear only stations within about 100 miles from your location, but once dusk sets in, the AM band comes alive with signals that can be heard from much greater distances than normal daylight hours, and other cities and states will soon be in your living room. The AM band is divided into three class groups. These are local, regional, and clear channels. Local stations are stations with a power level of 1,000 watts or less and have a small transmitter range, usually between 20 to 30 miles around a town. Their antennas are non-directional, which means that their signal is sent out equally in all directions from the transmitter. The power of these stations is usually the same as day and night. The local channel frequencies are 1230, 1240, 1340, 1400, 1450, and 1490, and are known by some radio listeners as the graveyard channels. There are many stations on these channels, and it generally sounds like a low rumble or growl, as it can be a real challenge to hear a long-distance station on these frequencies. Regional stations operate with higher power levels, usually up to 20,000 watts, and use directional antenna systems. These stations have different day and night power ratings. Higher power during the day to reach the far reaches of their broadcast area, and at night reduce power at sunset so as not to cause interference to other stations on the same frequency, and also use a directional antenna. Clear channel stations broadcast with a greater power of up to 50,000 watts and do not use directional antenna systems and can be heard pretty much across the country at night. You will find the clear channel stations in major cities across the country like 850 KOA Denver, 1200 WOAI San Antonio, Texas, 820 WBAP Dallas-Fort Worth, 750 WSB in Atlanta, Georgia, 870 WWL in New Orleans, Louisiana, just to name a few. In North America today, there are over 5,000 AM radio stations licensed by the Federal Communications Commission. This author has heard over 500 AM radio stations from his home in Central Texas from 35 states. This author actively contacts the stations he hears to inform them of his reception and politely seeking a confirmation card or a letter confirming his reception of their stations. Some stations are very surprised that their signal can travel that far and send bumper stickers, caps, and even calendars and whatever to the listener. Within the United States, there are two major radio clubs with their primary interest around AM radio. The National Radio Club, which has been in operation since 1933, and the International Radio Club both produce monthly magazines weekly during the DX season, which is the fall months, and both produce station reference guides. This is just a tip of the iceberg of the hobby. There are many facets that the DXer can pursue and enjoy. So the next time you're listening to the radio and you are tuning around, spend some time between your local stations at night and you'll be surprised what you may hear. I intend to add more articles on this hobby, so please be on the lookout.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side 2.